Welcome to Anxious Like You, a podcast hosted by Micheline Maloof and Nadia Adesi, two therapists who are anxious like you. In each episode, Micheline and Nadia dive into their guests' experience with anxiety and give you the tools you need to face your anxiety head on. This podcast is made in collaboration with Dive Thru, a mental wellness company.
On today's episode, we have Allegra Castens. Allegra is an associate marriage and family therapist who received her master's degree in clinical psychology. She specializes in the treatment of obsessive compulsive disorder, anxiety disorder, body focused repetitive behaviors, body dysmorphic disorder, and eating disorders.
Allegra has a lifetime of experience as a human being. Her passion for OCD treatment, education, and advocacy comes from her own personal experience with the disorder. She also understands that relief and recovery are real with a large dose of evidence-based treatment and an equally large dose of willingness. Allegra talks to us today about her personal struggles with OCD and her treatment, which led to her becoming a therapist. And she shares with us today her knowledge about OCD, what it's like to live with it, treatment, and actionable takeaways. So welcome back to Anxious Like You. Today we're speaking with Allegra Castens, and we are just going to dive right into this interview because I'm sure you guys will be excited to hear it. So Allegra, what motivated you to specialize in the treatment of OCD?
Oh, that's such a good question. And it's such a loaded question, but it was really my struggle with OCD that I didn't actually know was OCD for a few years that made me want to get into this field. So it was when I was 19 years old, I started getting these intrusive thoughts, which is essentially just like an unwanted, like pop-in thought that a lot of us get. But they would replay all day long, like all day, every day. And it was of like literally the last thing I would ever want to think about. It would be like naked kids popping into my mind and like pedophilic thoughts, like what if I'm a pedophile? And I was horrified. I had absolutely no idea what was happening because it was just like one day, everything switched. Like I had never had those thoughts before. And then I was working one day at this like retail store. I had one thought and it literally just felt like it was game over. I had thoughts like nonstop 24/7 after that. And that lasted for about, I would say like a year and a half before I had any, like I Googled, why am I having these thoughts? Which was like the scariest moment of my life because nobody wants to do that. And I saw OCD online, but I didn't think that it was OCD because everything that we hear about OCD is so different than what OCD actually is. And so it was kind of my experience with like sexually intrusive thoughts, which is actually a really big part of OCD, that made me want to get into this field because I just feel like so many people suffer silently and have no idea that what they're experiencing is OCD.
Yeah.
Wow. I know that everybody has very individual stories, but as a therapist, something I see all the time is very similar to what you just said of somebody going years without being able to identify that it's OCD and just struggling on their own. And then eventually getting to a point where it's so overwhelming that they need support or they need to reach out to somebody. Do you remember that moment or what led you to finally call somebody or reach out to a therapist?
I had so many of those moments, but I was so afraid because when you have thoughts like that, like my immediate thing was I'm going to go see a therapist and they're going to lock me up. Like there's no way that I'm going to go into a therapist's office, especially like an older white male, and sit in front of them and be like, hi, like welcome to my brain. I'm having all of these like naked kids popping into my mind. But I had so many of those moments. Like I remember one time I was driving to the doctor and it was just like a normal like physician doctor. And I kept saying to myself when I was like on the way there, I'm going to tell her that I'm experiencing this. Like I'm going to do it. And I got there and I just couldn't do it. I literally just said I was depressed and I was sobbing and she just thought it was depression. And I had multiple other moments where I thought like, I'm going to have to like go to a, like an actual treatment facility, like not resort, but that's like the word that came to mind right now, where I go there and like stay for a while because I'm not going to be able to live like this. And it was the day that really changed my whole life was I was at work. I used to be in the PR field. So I was a publicist and one of my colleagues, like she found me crying outside because I would frequently do that at work. Like I was very productive, but it was, I mean, it was so, so painful what I was experiencing. So she saw me crying outside and she literally just like grabbed her phone, called her therapist and was like, I have someone who needs a therapist now. Like, please find her a therapist. And that man called me and he gave me my therapist, Lori, who I've been seeing for, oh gosh, I think it's been 6 years now. And that was literally the moment that changed my entire life. Like literally the course of my whole life was my friend Annie calling her therapist.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
I feel like it's good to get a like a referral from someone that you trust, because I feel like if you just Google like therapist, you know, everything comes up. And I feel like I mean, it could have gone a million different ways. I could have spoken to someone who thought I was a pedophile, you know, and not like, she instantly knew for a session. She was like, you have OCD, which was fantastic, but it could have gone so many different ways. So I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
What was it like hearing you have OCD instead of your
I didn't believe it. I didn't believe it for so long, because it's like with OCD, the thoughts that you get feel so real because your brain is so hyperactive. Like if you actually look at MRIs of brains, like with and without OCD, the one with OCD is just like lit up. So I was constantly getting all of these false alarms from my amygdala that felt like what I was experiencing was real, even though I knew, like, obviously I knew these are so not me. This is so opposite to anything I would ever want to think. Like, even when I got the diagnosis, I kept being like, but what if it's not, you know, like, what if it's not? And that's OCD also. It's the doubting disorder. So you're going to doubt your diagnosis too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you mentioned that online, like when you, it's not exactly what it's, what you find online, the OCD isn't exactly the same. Can you talk a little bit about the differences of what you find online versus what OCD truly is?
Oh my gosh, of course. So I'm wearing this sweatshirt. It says OCD is not an adjective, because that is literally what everybody thinks OCD is. You hear it all the time. We're all a little bit OCD, or, oh, I'm so OCD too. Like my magazines are organized by color. I love it. And that really leads people who have actual OCD to have no idea that they're experiencing OCD. I thought of it, like when I Googled it and it said like, this is OCD, I was thinking to myself, there's no way. Like I imagined going to an OCD treatment center and either seeing people who are like washing their hands all the time, or people who are like lining all of their things up perfectly because they enjoy it. So that's kind of what people like describe OCD as, and it can be contamination based. So a lot of people with OCD do wash their hands compulsively, but the reality is it's so different than like liking to organize something. That's not OCD.
Yeah. And it leads to shame a lot too. You are experiencing OCD on a different level, whether it's sexual, scrupulosity, anything like that.
Yes, for sure. Mm-hmm. Or harm obsessions about like your newborn baby, which is so, so common. OCD has a pretty high suicide rate because like people are experiencing literally the worst thing that you would ever want to be thinking about, but then feel like I can't tell anybody about this.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the different categories that the obsessive or OCD thoughts come in?
So obsessions, like I'll start by just defining what OCD is because that will probably be helpful. So it starts with obsessions, which are intrusive and unwanted thoughts, images, or urges. And they're repetitive to the person experiencing them. And they're very ego dystonic, meaning the person doesn't like them. So like an actual pedophile knows that they are attracted to kids and they like that they are having these thoughts. Someone with pedophile obsessions is horrified by them, absolutely hates the thoughts, literally hides from kids compulsively because they're so afraid. And compulsions can be physical or mental. So a physical or mental act that someone is carrying out to prevent something bad from happening or alleviate anxiety. So with like, in terms of obsessional themes, I mean, OCD can latch on to absolutely anything. There's violent obsessions that a lot of people get. So like thoughts about stabbing their partner as an exposure, which we'll probably get into later, but exposure and response prevention is the gold standard treatment. I'll have some of my clients like stand with a knife to my back in session who have like the violent obsessions. Or a lot of sexually intrusive thoughts about kids, family members, animals, scrupulous thoughts, whether it's like religious scrupulosity or moral scrupulosity, there's existential obsessions where people like repetitively question the meaning of life. I mean, it could be anything, but often they're taboo subjects, which a lot of people don't know about.
Mm-hmm. And the shame that's developed as a result of that taboo subject, because you mentioned that you're not able to, initially when these things happen, you're convinced that something's wrong with you, like you yeah. are terrified. And yeah. so that leads to you not telling doctors, not telling therapists, mm-hmm. not telling friends. So you're suffering in silence. You mentioned the high suicide rate, probably mm-hmm. because of exactly that.
Yeah. And the sad thing is too, a lot of therapists don't understand OCD. And like, I consider myself so lucky to have gone to someone that did, because there are so many people who get wrongly hospitalized. Like suicidal obsessions are very common, where someone keeps having intrusive thoughts or images of killing themselves, but it's the last thing that they would want to do. Like they're not actually suicidal, but yeah. therapists like get scared and will hospitalize that client. So I mean, there's shame just from living with the OCD, and then you can have that added layer of like seeing a therapist who doesn't get it and then adding more trauma.
Yeah. And Micheline and I were just talking about something similar, where I heard a story where somebody was actually providing reassurance based on someone's OCD. So even when I first started off as a therapist, I didn't have enough education on OCD. I wouldn't have known the exact treatment. It's something you need to do on your own, but it's so important. And starting my own practice made me realize how common it is.
It's so common. It makes me so mad, because even in grad school, like, first of all, I had a professor in grad school who literally, like, I did a whole presentation on OCD for a class, and he literally cut me off mid-presentation and was like, this is wrong. And I'm like, yo, I live with it. I like have been treated by a specialist. Like, this is not wrong. But he just didn't understand like what OCD actually was. So I had someone with a PhD interrupt me mid-presentation and tell me that what I was talking about in regard to OCD was wrong. And it just makes me so mad, because then all of these therapists go out to practice and have no idea what OCD is.
Mm-hmm. No idea. Yeah. Wow. That's so bad.
Oh, it was so bad.
Especially you were living with it. You had lived experience. Right. No one knows better than you.
Yeah, for sure.
There's also a big misconception with OCD that there has to be a compulsion that is like a physical compulsion, almost where you're doing something. Would you mind explaining more about pure OCD?
Oh my gosh, of course. So I literally have this tattoo, because that is what pure O is what I live with. And what pure O is, like, it's all OCD. So pure O is just a nickname, but the person has obsessions, so like unwanted intrusive thoughts, and then performs mental compulsions, which is me. Like, you would never look at me like from an outsider's perspective and think that I have OCD, because you would never see me doing anything compulsively. And mental compulsions are really common, and they often get missed by therapists. So a big one is like mental checking. So let's say someone gets like a sexual obsession about a family member. It's like, let me check my groinal area to see if I feel aroused. Or like mentally reviewing the past, when I was in my baby's room, like, did I stab her? Did I do this? And like constantly going over it in your mind. A lot of ruminating. Why am I having these thoughts? What do they mean about me? Like trying to solve them. Like mental self-reassurance, thought neutralization. So trying to replace like a bad thought with a good thought in your mind. I mean, the list goes on. So it's a really good question, because a lot of therapists miss that too. They think, well, I don't see hand washing, so this can't be OCD.
I just wanted to ask, we never really explained why compulsions actually aren't beneficial and actually make things worse, even though that reassurance makes you feel better in the moment. Do you think you can just talk a little bit more about that?
Of course. So people tend to think that compulsions work. They think, if I just do this thing, I'm going to get certainty about my obsession. So I'm going to have certainty that I'm not a pedophile, or I'm going to alleviate my anxiety. But the thing is, compulsions don't work for a few different reasons. One, like we've talked about, is that OCD doesn't respond to logic. So if you are constantly getting reassured, or you're ruminating in your mind to try to solve it, your brain is never going to be able to connect to that. It's just not going to work. And then every single time you're performing a compulsion, you are reinforcing the obsessive compulsive cycle. So what's happening in the brain is the brain is sending off false alarms and you feel like the obsessions are dangerous. The work is to just sit with that feeling and do nothing about it. But when you're performing compulsions, you are directly telling your brain that the false alarms are actually real alarms. So it just keeps feeding into that cycle and making it worse. So cutting out compulsions is so important. So you're not exacerbating the OCD, and because it's just a huge waste of time and energy is what I explain to my clients. Like, it's never going to work. You're never going to have 100% certainty. You're never going to get rid of this thought. Like, you are just wasting your time. Do something else.
Do you see a problem with therapists recommending thought challenging with somebody who is experiencing OCD and participating in mental review constantly?
Yes, absolutely. So here's the thing. Like, I will, for like at the beginning of someone's treatment, I will go over cognitive distortions. So the person knows that like a lot of the, like what I'm thinking is distorted. But challenging the, like the content of your thoughts, like if it's beyond one session of looking at cognitive distortions, is super harmful because we can't change the thoughts that we're having. Like, it doesn't work like that. We can't suppress thoughts. We can't push them away. And the more that we try, the more of those unwanted thoughts we get. And not only that, but like the OCD brain can't connect to logic. Like, if someone could have just said to me, "You're not a pedophile," and I said, "Oh, great." So, like, I wouldn't have needed therapy and I wouldn't have suffered for as long as I did. Mm-hmm. So challenging thoughts is never going to be helpful. It's really just feeding into the cycle and making it worse for the person suffering. Mm-hmm.
I really believe that even for anxiety that's not OCD, I am a big criticizer of traditional CBT.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. The stop sign too. I'm like, in what world is that ever going to help anyone? Just hold up a red stop sign and then you'll never think about it again. Like,
oh. No. And Maddie and I just recorded an episode about intrusive thoughts. And mm-hmm. one of the activities we had people do on it was don't think of an elephant. Like, don't think of an elephant. And what happens is like, you start like thinking of all of these elephants and you can't tell your brain what not to think. Like, it doesn't work like that.
It doesn't at all. And that's what the OCD sufferer tries to do. Literally, like, I don't want to think this. Let me think about anything else. And that just keeps feeding into the cycle. And that's like a recipe for disaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you were somebody who struggled with OCD. Your friend found you. You went to therapy. You got really lucky, had an amazing therapist that knew about OCD, knew how to treat OCD. Was that how you decided to become a therapist because of that journey, or was there other factors involved that led you to choose this path?
I feel like I'm going to cry and I don't even know why I'm about to cry, but my therapist, Lori, just like literally changed my whole life. And I feel like the luckiest person like ever because of her. So it was her, really. I just saw her before this and I was sobbing too. So, but yeah, she is single-handedly like the greatest person I know. And I know that sounds really wild, but I didn't have a great upbringing or great parents or anything. So she just like, as an attachment figure, changed my whole world. And I just remember looking at her being like, I want to be like you. And I still want to be like her every session. I'm like, do you think I'm like you? She's like, Allegra, stop. I've had enough.
Inspired by a therapist.
So yeah, no, she's literally, I mean, oh gosh. Yeah. She changed my world. And I didn't want to treat OCD at first. I was just like, you know what? I love what Lori has done with me. Like, maybe I can be a therapist. And then eventually, obviously, because I'm so passionate about it, I like decided to treat OCD. But I would say Lori was really like the driving force for sure.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Is it at all triggering treating OCD, having OCD?
Oh my gosh, not at all. I thought it was going to be, for sure. That's why I didn't want to do it. Like, I thought to myself, like, I've literally had enough OCD in my life. I do not need to sit there all day long and hear about other people's obsessions. But once I got into it, it was kind of just like, I mean, this is just life for me now, you know, like there's nothing that would trigger me, especially having the pedophile obsessions, like any other, not that I don't want to say, I need to rephrase this in the right way. It's all difficult. It's like all OCD is difficult, but I think because I had what I consider to be like the most shameful theme, anything else that my clients come in with, I'm just like, okay, like this is like, it's nothing to me, honestly. Like there's, I would rather have any other thought than a sexually intrusive thought about a child. Mm-hmm. So nothing my clients come in with like scares me in the slightest. It literally just feels like a day in the life of my brain.
Do you self-disclose to your clients that you struggled with OCD?
Yeah. Not like I try not to like too much, you know, because I don't want to take up obviously space in a client session, but I feel like it really helps, you know, like, so they know, like I've thought these things, nothing you can say to me is going to scare me. And so they have kind of like a face of like recovery, because I do consider myself to be recovered, you know, however that looks like with OCD. I feel like it is inspiring for some clients. So I do disclose.
What does recovery or recovered look like to you?
So the way I describe it, and this is for me, I always say like, I don't want people to compare to me because I think recovery is different for everyone. But I would say like from getting nonstop intrusive thoughts, literally, I'm not kidding, all day, every day, it would just be like thought, thought, thought. I will get them today, but it's like 95% less. I feel like, I mean, I feel so lucky, which also makes me mad to say that, because why do I have to be lucky that I like survived something so horrible? But 95% less intrusive thoughts. I don't perform compulsions. I mean, I do every once and again, you know, I'm not perfect, but, and then I don't get a lot of anxiety either in terms of the OCD. Obviously I get anxiety about other things, but the thoughts don't bother me. I don't avoid kids. I actually just worked at a daycare, like doing like little therapy things with kids. So yeah, it feels like I feel kind of normal again, which feels odd, but freeing.
So my question, awesome. I have a follow-up question to that, because I know, yeah. You know, we just talked about not trying to reduce the anxiety and reduce the, the thoughts, right? Yes. We're working with them, and we'll get into, you know, the treatment and all of that. Of OCD, but do you find, I think a lot of people, when, you know, they're having these really intense and scary intrusive thoughts, it's hard for them to hear like, okay, what do you mean not stop them? What do you mean like, don't do this? And then they hear your story or somebody else's story where it's like, okay, I don't have them as much anymore. And they really want to just get to that point. Mm-hmm. So it gets to the place where it's like, okay, but why am I not there yet? How do you handle that, and how can we help somebody who is stuck in that process?
That is, I mean, that's probably the best question I've ever been asked in a podcast interview. So, it's such a good question, and that's why like I hesitate to share sometimes, because I don't want my clients to think like I'm doing something wrong. But what I remind them is like, you weren't there and you didn't see me in like the lowest of my low. You know, and I just have to remind them that like I was that person who would fight with like accepting the presence of thoughts every single session. Like I would sit with my therapist and sob like hysterically every session, to the point where she would tell me to chill. And I mean, I would never tell a client to chill. So like, this was like a different OCD therapist I saw, but I was like, I fought it so hard. And I tell my clients that too. Like I've been on this journey. I have fought like letting my thoughts be there more times than I can even count, but I had to trust the process. And when you do that, things can get better. So I just kind of try to remind them like where I am now is not where I was. So you can't compare yourself.
OCD treatment is hard.
It's hard.
Probably one of the hardest. You're exposing yourself to the thing that is the scariest possible thing in the world to you.
Yes. I literally tell my clients that all the time. Like you are such a badass, because it's, in my opinion, one of the worst disorders to live with. And then you have to go through treatment and literally expose yourself to the thing that terrifies you the most. Like, how is that fair? Mm-hmm. You know, like you have to hold a knife to your therapist's back, or like you have to like look at pictures of kids in bathing suits, like literally just like the worst thing you'd ever want to do.
Mm-hmm. And the fear.
Can you give kind of a general rundown of what exposure response therapy is?
Absolutely. So the exposure piece of it is exactly what you just said, like facing your fears head on. Because what tends to happen for people with OCD is there's a lot of avoidance of anything that would trigger an obsession. And the person has this like irrational fear of like facing something triggering. So I don't mean irrational in the sense of like it's easy to get rid of it, but it is pretty irrational. You know, it's like the mom who loves her child deeply is now having intrusive thoughts about stabbing them. So the exposure looks like actually facing your fear head on. And then the goal is to tolerate that anxiety and discomfort without performing compulsions. So that's the response prevention piece, is we are preventing you from performing a safety behavior, whether that's physical or mental. And that's how we like break the obsessive compulsive cycle and rewire the brain. Because when we face something head on, our brain starts to recognize that it's not all that dangerous. And then when we cut out the compulsions, we stop signaling to the brain that the obsessions are really important. Mm-hmm. So essentially what it does is you face your fears, you cut out the rituals, and you learn that this isn't dangerous. I don't have to avoid this. Like, I can cope with it.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us like an example or like paint us a picture of what a session of ERP mm-hmm. might be like?
Yeah, for sure. So it usually starts with me like talking about homework that they did, because I assign a lot of homework during the week. My thing is like, if you're doing 15 minutes of homework a day, then you're getting an extra therapy session a week. So I go over homework with clients, and then I will like pull up their hierarchy, which is a hierarchy of exposures, like from probably like 3 to 10. And then we just do the exposures. So, I mean, everything's telehealth right now, so it's not as like exciting per se as it, like by that, I mean, like my clients can't hold up a knife to my neck,
yeah.
But I'll have them, I mean, anything from like watching movies about suicide to writing suicide letters if they have self-harm obsessions. Yeah, literally just like constant exposure, response prevention, utilizing mindfulness skills.
Mm-hmm. That's really helpful.
It's a lot of doing. It's a lot of behavioral stuff. It's not processy. Besides, like if they do an exposure, I'll say like, what did that feel like? Did you use your tools during it? But we're not processing like outside life stuff. It's definitely not talk therapy.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. It's not talk therapy.
It's no, it's so behavioral.
Very behavioral.
I think it goes to show though, that if you are letting your client hold a knife to you, that you know that that client is not doing anything. And even for them, this has to be my OCD. My therapist is letting me hold her neck. Or
no,
her
and they'll be like, they'll be like shaking like this, like they'll literally be like, and I'm like, you're fine. And all I go on, I'll be like, do it. Like I said, do it already. And like, they don't, because the person with OCD like is like less likely, I feel like, than someone without OCD to do these things. Like they care so deeply that they're having these thoughts, and they will do anything to make sure that like the thoughts don't come true. So I know I would never, ever have a client hold a knife to my neck that I was even slightly concerned about.
Exactly. Yeah.
Find you a different therapist. Not today.
You mentioned that you had a thought one day, like one day you were fine. And then one day you had that one thought that triggered everything. Do you think that it was the amount of attention and the fear that that thought generated that made it worse? Or do you think that that was something that was going to happen regardless?
That is a good question. And it's honestly one I wish I had an answer to. Like I have a few different theories. The first is that I was experiencing anorexia before the OCD. So I think my lack of eating and compulsive exercise really messed with my like brain chemistry. I used to blame myself for a while, like for the OCD happening, which I don't now, but I think it would have happened anyways, I think is like the probable answer, because when I was in eighth grade, I had kind of like a flavor of this, but it went away after 2 weeks. I had this math teacher, I think her name was like Mrs. Chen or something. And I would literally get images of her naked, and she was not somebody I wanted to see naked. I'm literally like in the eighth grade, like visualizing this in class, like dying, but it went away after 2 weeks. So I was kind of like, I don't know what that was, but it went away. So like, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then at age 19, when that thought popped in, I don't know how to describe it other than like my entire brain changed. Like I could like feel it change. And I felt like a different person. Like I just knew from that moment going on, like I'm never going to be able to shake this thought. Like I'm just not going to be able to. Mm-hmm.
That's so interesting.
It was horrifying. Like I literally, it felt like my brain broke. Like it was just, it was awful.
There's also not enough research out yet about OCD. And is it genetic? Is it happening in our childhood? They say between 4 and 5, but that's hard to identify.
Trauma.
Like what's the reason?
I think it's largely genetic.
Yeah.
And people ask that too, like, were you abused as a child or whatever? And I like was not sexually abused as a child. Like OCD really just attacks what you value. And I love kids. Like I used to be the 5-year-old babysitting like the 2-year-olds in the neighborhood. And I've always wanted to be a mom. So OCD really just goes after like what you love the most.
Interesting. Yeah. Makes it so much worse because it's
so much worse. And listen, every theme is very painful and every theme is hard to deal with. But I have a special place in my heart for people with pedophile obsessions because I think that is like the most shame-inducing obsession to have. Like you can go to a therapist and say like, I keep having these intrusive thoughts that like, I'm going to die of cancer. And that's so much less shameful than I keep having these intrusive thoughts about having sex with a child.
Is pedophile obsession with OCD different than scrupulosity or is it in the same?
Yeah. I mean, it's all at the end of the day, it's all an obsession. So like we just use names like pedophile obsession and scrupulous obsession to just like give a nickname to it. So people who don't know can kind of understand it better. Scrupulosity is either like religious or moral obsessions. So some of my clients are really fixated on whether or not they're doing things like right or wrong. And that would be like moral scrupulosity. Some people get religious scrupulosity where they have to pray in just the right way. And if they don't, they have to redo their entire like prayer. So let's say someone prays at night for 15 minutes. That might take someone with scrupulous obsessions like 2.5 hours to complete that prayer because it never feels like right enough.
So they're praying or, you know, acting on the compulsion in order to reduce the anxiety.
Exactly. Yes. Or some people get like sexually intrusive thoughts about God or like they'll get thoughts like fuck God that terrify them. So then they feel like they have to pray compulsively. Yes.
Or go to confession, which is
a yes. Big, a lot of confession.
Yeah.
And even praying can be a compulsion for a lot of people. So it's like, you have to ask yourself, am I praying to genuinely connect with God or am I praying to like make this thought go away?
Is there one type of, you know, obsession that is most common that you see mostly in your clients or is it pretty, you know, spread out?
Honestly, I don't know if it's because like I'm open about my own like theme and I think that I get clients who feel like, okay, I can open up to you because I know that you've had this, but I tend to see a lot of like the more taboo obsessions, like harm, pedophilia, sexually intrusive thoughts. I don't think that they occur like most commonly, but I think that's typically like I get more of those in my caseload, which makes sense to me. If someone's like listened to a podcast interview where I talk about it so openly that I feel like people are like, oh my God, I can talk to you.
Yeah. Definitely. They connect with you. They don't feel alone and they're gonna be more open to talk to you about
it. Yeah, for sure.
You talked a little bit about your childhood and, you know, going, you know, when you first started having the thoughts and you used the word horrific. Mm-hmm. I want to understand what is life like for someone who lives with OCD before they've ever talked to anybody about them. What is that? Can you paint us a picture of what that might look like?
Oh man, this could get dark. Honestly, like, I feel like I don't even have the words to describe it. It felt like living hell every single day. Like if you can imagine, like there's a good exercise that this OCD therapist does where he has people who don't have OCD write down, I want my like ex to die. So like, imagine like the person you love the most. And then imagine that thought replaying in your brain all day long. Like that's really what it felt like. And there was no escape. Like there's no escape from your brain. I would dream about these thoughts. I would wake up and the thoughts would hit me in the face. I would be at work and they would just be constantly replaying. Every time I saw a kid, I would get like 12 out of 10 anxiety. I mean, it felt like I couldn't breathe for like 3.5 years. I mean, I couldn't sleep because I was so afraid of like the thoughts coming into my dreams. So I would just lay in bed, like so afraid to even sleep. And I mean, I was at the point where if I didn't figure something out, like I wasn't going to live. Like there, I just knew like I was not going to live like this. It just wasn't going to happen. So it's, I mean, yeah, it's like you're living in a, like a burning room that you can't get out of.
How was your first exposure?
Oh, my first exposure. It was horrible. Oh my God. I literally remember like screaming and crying like, this isn't working. And she's like, what do you mean? I was like, it's not. It's okay. It was so horrible. Oh my God. It was frightening. Like literally it was death. It was so awful. Yeah. It was excruciating. I feel and like it's so funny because my clients,
I imagine you like, trust the
therapist. Oh yeah, you have to for sure. Cause I saw an OCD therapist. I saw like two like different therapists at the same time for different things. And the first OCD therapist that I saw like didn't explain to me why we were doing exposure and response prevention. And I feel like it was early on. He would literally just like be like, okay, sit in front of this computer. And then he would like pull up a video about like pedophiles being caught. And then he would just like stand behind me. And I was like watching it. Like I didn't know why I was doing it. Like no one had explained ERP to me. So that was an example of like, oh my God, no, do not do that to someone. So I stopped seeing him. And then when I found like an OCD therapist that I really trusted, it was a lot better.
Well, I mean, there needs to be some form of psychoeducation. No, you need to know why you're watching a video of pedophiles right. being caught.
And then he was like, and then for homework, you're going to go sit at the playground. What? No, I was like, what? And then the kicker, this is so bad. This shouldn't be the kicker. It was like, he compared his balding to my OCD. And I was like, I'm not even like, we're not even going to go here. He literally was like, I used to be so afraid of going bald. And I can only imagine how you feel right now. Sir, you
talk
didn't
about think validation.
You were, right. Like you didn't think you were a pedophile, boo. Like I would gladly be bald over having OCD. So yeah, it was a train wreck of like a therapy.
Oh my God.
It was a good example of like what not to do with clients for sure.
Yeah, it showed you the kind
of it gave me a lesson of like my clients have to understand why they're doing this or they're not gonna buy into it and they're not gonna stay in treatment.
It's scary because we put so much trust in professionals because we think
terrifying
in our, like us too. I mean, this can apply to us as well. I'm not just trying to target other people, but you think they're the experts in what it is and you listen to them. Okay. I'll just do this without knowing why. And it's not helpful. If anything, it can be more harmful.
Oh my gosh. So many people that I see have been harmed by like previous therapists. Mm-hmm. Really sad.
Yeah, I think it's really important to know that like not all therapists specialize in everything. Mm-hmm. And I think like you said, one thing that's really important to take away is that when we're in graduate school, I think they do a really good job at teaching us how not to fuck someone up, but they don't teach you how to treat things that are serious. They don't teach you, they don't say, here's a chapter on how to treat OCD. Here's a chapter on how to treat borderline personality disorder. We don't get that. We get the theories and then the therapist has to go out and get training in these areas. So this is like, okay, when I'm looking for certain treatment, you want to ask the right questions, right? What is your training? What type of therapy do you provide? What is your success with, you know, people who have the issues that I'm facing? So I think it's really important to note that because, you know, how much psychoeducation do you do? Because if you're going to go into a therapy session and they're going to put you in front of a movie or video,
and now you have no idea
watching things that you're, you know, terrified of. And oh my God, it could be so harmful.
Yeah. And he was like standing behind me. It's like, I would never do that to a client. That's just weird. Like sit in your chair, sir. Like I don't need you like watching over my shoulder. Like it was so uncomfortable.
Yeah. I could imagine that. So uncomfortable. And
a spectacle, honestly. Like I felt like I was like being watched. It was not good. Yeah.
Do people ever question you being a therapist who has OCD or a mental disorder?
That's a good question. Honestly, I don't think I'm sure like some people out there think it, but I no one's ever said anything to me about it. So I've never gotten that directly to me. I could see someone thinking like, wow, I hope she's like well enough to see clients, but mostly I just get like, wow, this is so inspiring that you like are doing this.
That's good. Yeah. Cause we've heard it. I know Nadia made a video on her TikTok because somebody had commented like, oh, a therapist with anxiety, how are you going to help? And I've gotten it so many times too. Like, how can you have CPTSD and help those with CPTSD or anxiety and help? Like, aren't you like, you can't even help yourself. And so
it makes me so upset too. Cause I feel like it's hard to help ourselves, but it's so much easier to help someone else. Like it, just because we're struggling, which we all do, we're all human, doesn't mean that we can't help someone else.
It's so ridiculous. So I have really bad health anxiety and I'll be like reassuring Google and I'll talk to my clients an hour later and I'll be like, don't give in to the compulsion. Don't Google. Like I'm the worst.
Honestly, it's so true. Like I could give my client literally like anything. And then it's so hard for me to believe it sometimes. It's just harder when it comes to yourself. And I think people are judgmental of helping professionals too sometimes, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. What about the stigma associated with OCD?
It's tough because I don't think people really know like exactly what it is, you know? So people often say like, I'm so OCD, not even necessarily like it's super stigmatizing. They just use it in the wrong way. Yeah. I think, you know, when people talk about things like pedophile obsessions, if the person doesn't understand OCD, there's a lot of stigma, you know, they might think, oh my gosh, this person actually is a pedophile. So I think people with OCD, like real OCD, typically feel a lot of shame and stigma, but I don't think the general public knows enough about like what OCD actually is.
Do you find that people who maybe have like counting compulsions or contamination come in if it hasn't progressed to something that's kind of taken over and say, I just thought this was normal. I thought this was how people tend to live anyways.
Yeah, I do. I have some clients who come in and say that, like, I never knew that this wasn't normal. Like I thought like existential obsessions, I typically get that with, you know, like I just thought everyone thought like this. And it's like, it's amazing for them to see that, no, like this doesn't happen to everybody. Or yeah, like I just have to do X, Y, and Z like 50 times. And I thought everyone did that and everyone doesn't do it.
Yeah. It's almost like there's a power just within labeling it as OCD.
Oh, for so much power, for sure. I feel like a diagnosis can be life-changing.
Right. Yeah.
That's really important. And okay. So we know that diagnosing can be really, really powerful to get people to feel like they're not alone or to understand their cluster of symptoms. But I'm wondering, because I get this question a lot on my videos and posts, like, I don't have access to a therapist. I don't know how to get diagnosed. I can't get diagnosed because of this. What advice do you have for someone out there who may be struggling with OCD, but doesn't have access to mental health or other resources?
Oh man, that is such a hard question, because I'll get DMs too, like, is this OCD? And it's like, I can't diagnose you via Instagram. I would say using like self-help books, like there's some really great workbooks for OCD, and reading as much as possible, or even looking at online courses. Like Kimberly Quinlan has a really great online course for OCD. I think it's like $195 or something like that. And it's a 6-hour course. So just finding other resources, because sadly, like lower fee therapy doesn't really exist for OCD because it's such a specialty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good advice. Yeah, definitely courses. I think having people like you online who are open and talking about it and they can relate to and know that, hey, this isn't like a life sentence or anything that, you know, you struggle with all the time. Is really, really helpful. The work you're doing is really important. I also heard you mention anorexia when you were younger. Mm-hmm. And we got some questions from our followers on Instagram. And one of the questions was talking about, is there a connection between OCD and eating disorders?
So OCD and eating disorders they present similarly sometimes. And I think it can be hard to like figure out which is which, but essentially like OCD and eating disorders both have obsession. Anorexia nervosa, like for instance, there are obsessions, a lot of obsessions about food and weight and body image, But what differentiates an eating disorder from OCD is that the eating disorder obsessions and compulsions are specifically related to food and body image. With OCD, the obsessions are like irrational and they're unrelated to body image or food in that way. So a lot of people have, like, they are comorbid and a lot of people have both. But if you are like, let's say you're restricting food because you want to be thinner, that would be more so eating disorder territory. Whereas I will get clients who restrict food and are underweight because of their OCD, but it's more of a magical thinking thing. Like if I eat this food, something bad is going to happen and it has nothing to do with the way that they look. So they can be like co-occurring and they do present similarly, but they're definitely different.
Yeah. So not necessarily connected, but they just the psychology behind it might.
I need to learn more about that. Honestly, I don't know enough about it, but from having both like anorexia and OCD, they felt very similar, just like different content, mm-hmm. you know, like my compulsive exercise and like the nonstop thinking about like food and body felt very similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We talked a little bit about harm OCD and pure OCD. That's the type you struggled, you said, with pure mm-hmm. OCD.
Yes.
Do you find that most people have that type of OCD? Is that more common than the one with the compulsions?
So, well, pure OCD, there are compulsions. They're just mental. Yeah. So at the end of the day, like it's all OCD, but in terms of like obsessions and mental compulsions, a lot of people do have the mental compulsions and not physical compulsions. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly like, you know, a percentage per se, but I think a lot of people go undiagnosed because they have mental compulsions that aren't seen by a therapist.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's all OCD. It's just like nicknames, essentially.
I think sometimes people also don't even recognize what a compulsion can be. And then even in treatment, I find like a month or even a little bit later in, I'm recognizing, okay, this is a compulsion. Maybe it's just nothing you realized, or you weren't able to put the two things together because it wasn't so obvious.
Yeah.
Like, but I think they don't notice.
Yeah. Avoidance is a compulsion. Reassurance seeking is a compulsion. So there are so many compulsions that people wouldn't think like are compulsions.
There's so many hidden ones. Mm-hmm. With scrupulosity, I find that like a lot of the times people will be rewriting their morals or rewriting their values, or I'm not the person I used to be anymore. And I strive so hard not to be that person. I'm like, well, sounds like
sounds
a compulsion.
Totally.
So your golden treatment, or what you would recommend, is exposure.
Exposure and response prevention, for sure. That should be like 90% of someone's treatment. Things like mindfulness mm-hmm. and acceptance and commitment therapy are good, like adjunctive treatments, but exposure and response prevention should be the go-to. Not talk therapy, nothing talk therapy related for OCD.
Yeah, I think talk therapy, as we get more research in terms of like a lot of mental health disorders, is, you know, it's going to change in the future, I think, as we get more research. And
for sure,
therapy is the gold standard for OCD. Is there a database where people can find therapists that specialize in ERP?
Yeah. So there's a foundation called the IOCDF. And if you go to IOCDF.org, there's a find help directory. So you can look up specialists in your area via that.
Thank you. That's really helpful.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I will say, I don't know that they fully vet all of the therapists. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of them are true OCD specialists, but even if you find someone on that website, you've got to ask, like, do you specialize in ERP? Give me examples of cases that you've worked with. How would you treat me? Like, you have to ask all the right questions still.
Absolutely. Consultation mm-hmm. at the beginning over the phone is still very, very important.
Yes.
Yeah. What advice would you have for people out there that aren't really sure if they should seek help, or maybe they just want to try something on their own? Is there anything like a tip or something that they can try at home to kind of help themselves with OCD?
Honestly, acceptance. That is like the thing that I preach, and that is so important with OCD. And really by acceptance, I mean allowance, allowing your thoughts to be there and allowing your feelings to be there. That is game changing for like living with OCD. Because naturally with anxiety, we want to push it away. We think, oh gosh, this is horrible. I don't want to feel this. But the more we push it away, the more anxious we are. If you can really just allow your thoughts and feelings to be there without paying attention to them, your life is going to change.
Yes. So
and it's way easier said than done.
So. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's like, how do I accept something? I don't want to accept this. This is so scary. Mm-hmm. But really acceptance isn't about saying, oh, it is what it is. I guess I just have to accept that my life is shitty. It's really about accepting that the thoughts or whatever's happening right now in this moment is happening, mm-hmm. and not denying it or trying to push it away, and really more like turning towards it. Right. And
yes, exactly.
And, yeah. And being there with it.
Mm-hmm. We're leaning into it instead of like running away from it.
Exactly. Which is exposure in itself.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Exactly. So important. Actually, it's funny because I have a story. My husband has high anxiety. And there was one time when a dog scratched him accidentally. Like the dog came up to him and like his nail kind of just scratched him a little bit. And he came home because we don't know the dog. We know that they're neighbors, but we don't know the dog. We don't know them. And I could see him pacing around the house and I'm like, what's going on? And he's like, the dog scratched me. Like, what if it has rabies? I'm like,
oh yep.
Domesticated dogs don't have rabies because they're house dogs. Like they're our neighbors. You see them with the dog all the time. The dog didn't bite you. There didn't draw blood. Like it was literal scratch. And he couldn't sleep the next day. He goes to the neighbor's house and asks to see for the rabies.
No.
The rabies. Yes. And I try to convince him not to. I was like, please don't do this. This is going to make things worse. Like,
please don't embarrass us.
and then he went again. It didn't stop. No. He went again the next day because he was like, I don't know if I really saw it.
Wasn't good enough.
That's what happens. Yes. Reassurance is never going to work. Mm-hmm. It may be for 5 minutes, you feel better. And then your brain goes, oh shit. What if I didn't hear that correctly? Mm-hmm. What if I didn't see it correctly? Let me just Google it again.
Yeah. I told him, I was like, but you saw it with your own eyes. And he's like, yeah, but I can't trust that I saw it. I don't remember that I saw it. Mm-hmm. And so he went back and I was like, okay, are we done now? Like, we gotta be done.
Exactly. I saw this really good analogy that was when you go to a pond and you feed a duck, it likes the food. And then next time it'll expect it and it'll bring 5 more friends. And then those ducks will expect it and bring their own friends. And now it's never ending. Yep. And I think it's the same thing with reassurance. Once you do it once, you need it more and more and more. And you need different ways because that one's not working.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this has been an extremely informative episode. It has been amazing to chat with you. And I want to know, tell our listeners, because I'm sure they're going to want to follow up with you and you know, learn more about this. So can you tell them where they can find you?
For sure. So Instagram is probably my biggest platform. It's at Obsessively Ever After. And I also write for Psychology Today and Very Well Mind. So every month you'll see new articles there. And then I just joined Clubhouse, but I still don't really know what it is. So maybe you'll find me on there at some point if I can figure it out. But I would say Instagram is probably the main way.
Amazing. Well, thank you again for chatting with us today.
Of course. It was so fun.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you heard, make sure to subscribe and leave a review. Join the Anxious Like You community by following @AnxiousLikeYou on Instagram. See you in the next episode.